Hey, my name is Thomas. I'm an engineer, a climber, a skier, a designer, and a photographer.
Welcome to Norrøna Podcast. My name is Eivind Eislott. In Norrøna Podcast, we want to inspire you and facilitate great adventures in nature by meeting exciting people and telling fascinating stories. In this episode, we'll meet Thomas Karlström, an icon in the Scandinavian outdoor industry. In the early 1970s, Thomas established the famous sports store Skandinavisk Høyfjellsutstyr, or Scandinavian Mountaineering Equipment in English, in the small mountain village of Hemsedal in Norway. At the same time, he was an ice climbing pioneer and started designing great products for Norrøna. It's a pleasure to welcome this living legend to Norrøna Podcast. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you.
You look great.
I do.
Yeah?
Yes.
Do you come straight out of Hemsedal, the famous Norwegian ski resort?
The famous Norwegian ski resort and ice climbing resort.
Yeah. Not to forget.
Not to forget. That's important. For me, at least.
You must tell us, when did you decide to move to Hemsedal?
I decided to move to Hemsedal in the autumn 69.
That's way back.
Yeah.
And why?
Because I got an invitation from the Norwegian School of Mountaineering. And I was engaged in the Swedish Alpine Club, Svenska Fjällklubben.
Okay.
As editor for their yearbook and their magazine.
Okay.
And in that situation, I had contact with the Norwegian climbers too. So I just had contact with a master of the Norwegian School of Mountaineering in Hemsedal, Nils Forlund. And he asked me if I wanted to go to Norway and work with him.
Okay. As an instructor?
As an instructor,
yeah.
Yes. And editor for publications.
Okay.
Because I have a background in graphic design and photography.
So you both write, design,
yeah,
and take photos.
Yeah.
When you decided to live in Hemsedal, was that because of the nearby climbing possibilities,
yes,
as well?
And skiing and climbing.
Yeah.
Both skiing and climbing, yeah.
And soon,
to live in the mountains.
Yeah. And soon you started this renowned sports store called Skandinavisk Høyfjellsutstyr.
Scandinavian Mountaineering Equipment.
Yeah.
Skandinavisk Høyfjellsutstyr. Yes, I worked with the Norwegian School of Mountaineering for about 2 years. Then the headmaster there, Nils, and I found out that it was a bit difficult to work together.
Okay.
So we decided to split.
Yeah.
And the situation with climbing gear in Norway was quite hopeless. It was one spot shop in Oslo who dealt with climbing gear, but only in the summertime.
One shop only,
yeah,
in summer.
Sportco.
And they sold a little bit.
And it was a bit snobbish spot. They had golf, which was a very, very small sport at that time, and tennis.
Okay.
And that Karl Johan Gate 27.
Okay.
It was very, very fashion.
The main street.
Main street in Oslo. So I started climbing with my brother in 1956 when I was 14 years old.
Okay.
So that was in Stockholm, yeah.
Yeah.
And I climbed the first time in Norway in 62. So I know about a lot about climbing gear, I thought. So I found out that I must do something. I started a sport shop for climbing gear, special shop for climbing gear.
But you started it in Hemsedal, which,
yes,
was a small village.
Yes, but that was a place I wanted to stay, to live, for the climbing and for skiing.
Yeah, but did you have any customers?
I was, during the time, the 2 years, working with the Norwegian School of Mountaineering.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, the climbing community was very, very small.
Yeah.
So I knew nearly all about all climbers in Norway.
You knew your customers.
Yes, I knew. Yes, I did. So that was not a big thing.
No.
To find customers. So, and because of the limited possibility to buy climbing gear in Norway, the market was open.
Yeah.
It was just to find the right gear, the right distribution ways, and the right to buy in the equipment. So that was quite easy.
Yeah.
And I started up with it. That was my idea. I started up with one of the Norena directors later, Hans Petter Fernander.
Okay.
He and I and a friend of him, Jan Fredrik Larsen, we three started up the company in September 1972.
1972?
Yeah. At that time, I knew which companies, international companies, I want to buy equipment from.
Yeah.
So I took contact with them and made arrangement, and we started to import gear.
And do you remember which brands you contacted?
Schoenaerd Equipment.
Schoenaerd,
yeah.
Which is now?
Yvonne Schoenaerd and Tom Frost started a business in the 50s.
Yeah.
And in 1989, I think it was, Yvonne quit with the company because that was some trouble with lawyers about a rope break, which didn't work. So he has quit the company, and the company now, he took one of his workers in his team took over the company, which is Black Diamond today.
Yeah.
And Black Diamond is a quite well-known company.
Yeah, it is.
So that was, Black Diamond is old Schoenaerd equipment.
Right, right. Yeah.
And they, Schoenaerd did what I told you about Picasso said. You can steal if you do it with style.
Yeah.
And Schoenaerd was master in stealing with style. One example is shock stones. The British climbers, I used shock stones for many, many years because I didn't want to use pitons in the rock.
Okay, to secure the climber.
So shock stones to secure the climbers, yeah, as runners.
Mm-hmm.
So the first shock stones was small pieces of stone, which they put in the crack and put a sling of rope around it. Yeah. Next, they found metal pieces and used that, and then they start to fabric metal pieces, special designed for use as shock stones, as runners for climbers.
Yeah.
And the British companies made it quite primitive. Yvonne saw it, made it more and more sophisticated.
Okay.
So he took the market over the world,
yeah,
very fast. And we started to import Schoenaerd equipment. Then he had a climbing shock stone, which is called Hexcentric.
Mm-hmm.
So the British used small pieces of rock, which they put in the crack and put a sling of rope around it, mm-hmm, as a belay, as a runner.
Yeah.
Then they found metal nuts, which could use the same way, and that has six flats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Schoenaerd Hexcentric was made a bit asymmetric, but not totally asymmetric. So I made a new design of it, sent it to Schoenaerd in the autumn 63, and got the response that they took my design and at that time developed to be the most popular climbing nut in the climbing communities all over the world.
So it's fantastic.
That was quite fantastic. And we were a very small company. But Yvonne and his companion, Tom Frost, gave us the best buying possibilities.
Okay.
The lowest prices, which only the big, big distributors all over the world had. We had the same.
In Skandinavisk?
Yeah, in Skandinavisk. If I had 10 pence of royalty, I should be a multimillionaire today. So I could, but I didn't ask for it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
And we had become personal friends with Yvonne and his wife Melinda, and we visited them. So, yes.
It's a great story.
It was that was in the 70s. And me and my wife Cecil were over in the climbing Odyssey in the United States in 77. Started up in East in the Schwangangs Crag outside New York, and finished in Yosemite Valley and Tacuis Rock in California.
Ah, what a great journey.
Yeah, over the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun, a lot of climbing.
But I remember the catalogs you made for Skandinavisk Høyfjellsutstyr.
Yes.
Because I was sitting at home in Ålesund, in western coast of Norway, reading your catalogs from end to end, just sitting there, reading and dreaming.
You know, it was nothing. Norsk Tindeklubb, Norwegian Alpine Club,
yeah,
they had an idea about you shouldn't make, climbing should be very exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You should make an advertisement or so for climbing, because it could be dangerous and so on. They had many ideas about it should be very exclusive. So there were no teaching literature for climbing in Norway. And I found Yvonne Chouinard's catalogue, the Chouinard Equipment Catalogue from 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And I found Eastern Mountain Sport in the United States. They had a catalogue where they put in the equipment, they put in how to handle and care about the equipment, and especially how to use it, with technical articles how to use, including how you care about your skis, how you care about your climbing gear, even articles in these catalogs, as was sales catalogs, about avalanche and avalanche danger.
It was a revolution.
Yeah.
And it was perfect.
They did it in the United States, and I took that idea, especially for an Eastern Mountain Sport. how they build up sleeping bags, ideas about building sleeping bags. I took it.
Yeah.
And we put it in our catalog.
And you made the greatest catalogs ever made in Scandinavia.
I think so at that time, yes.
And they are still an inspiration for us that try to write about the outdoors today.
A lot of other companies like Caravan in Sweden and Ayunglak in Norway, they just took the idea, the same idea.
Yeah.
But later. But the main catalog, first catalog, was quite primitive, made on the kitchen table in Hemsedal in 73, and then 74 and 75. Then come our big catalog in 77,
mm-hmm,
with a lot of articles about buying equipment, caring about equipment, and how to use it and how to not use it.
Yeah.
And choosing equipment, which type of activity do we have, and recommend equipment for that activity. But the sport university,
yeah,
Norges Idrettshøyskole, they bought 50.
They bought 50
pieces of the catalog. Yeah.
As a teaching book.
As a teaching book, yes. So it was a teaching book in climbing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
The first teaching book in climbing, rock and ice climbing in Norway, was our catalog.
It was?
Yeah.
And these catalogs, they have an historic value. Do you have a complete collection yourself?
No, I missed the 1980 catalog.
1980?
Yeah.
So if you have summer, any listeners here with the 1980 catalog?
Summer 1980 with Blåtind okay, in front. And that was this catalog was published in the spring, early summer in 1980.
Okay.
It was size A5 and landscape size A5, and in front was a picture of Blåtind in Troms.
The Blåtind Mountain.
Blåtind Mountain in Troms. And when this catalog was published, it was put in the mailboxes for different people, our customers.
Yeah.
Two or three of the climbers, I made the first route climb through this wall. And when they come home from the climb, they found our catalog in the
in the mailbox.
Yes. So that was a catalog I can't find at home.
If anybody out there finds the 1980 catalog, give Thomas a call.
Yes, yes, I would like that.
But you were a very strong climber yourself in the 70s and 60s.
70s and 80s, yeah.
Both on rock and ice.
Yes, I must say so. I had done a lot of quite hard climbs, but very often I use my method. I choose climbing pals, which are much better than I am. So,
that's a great technique.
Yeah, yes. When I come to a crucial point, I say, you can lead it.
Always choose a better climbing partner.
Yes, that was a joke, but it was some of my hardest ice climbs I've done with climbers better than I am, mm-hmm. and also rock climbs.
Okay.
So, climbing was very important, so... Yeah.
You must tell us something about the ice climbing scene in Norway in the 70s.
The ice climbing, as we saw it from the 60s, for us, ice climbing was alpine ice climbing, snow slopes or glacier climbing, but not frozen waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in 1969, still in Sweden, I saw the British climbing magazine Mountain Magazine. On the front piece, they had a picture of two Americans climbing a waterfall in California.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it was not a waterfall. It was an aqueduct that was destroyed by the water running down a slope. It was not vertical, but nearly vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's climbing up that. When I saw these pictures, I thought, oh, wow, we can do the same.
Yeah.
That was in the 69-70. And in 70, we started to climb very easy, not very steep, frozen, small waterfalls,
mm-hmm.
in Hemsedal. And now the Trondheim climbers started up to do the same. But I think we were pushed the most during the 70s.
Yeah.
So the first... the most real ice frozen waterfall climbing was made in the mid-70s.
And with what kind of equipment?
With glacier axes and small ice hammers.
That sounds dangerous.
Without hand slopes or something. So it was quite hard.
Yeah.
And especially if it was vertical, you got very...
Exposed
and pumped in the underarms.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So then we did some climbing in 75, 76, which were today are, they are very, very popular climbs in Hemsedal.
Okay.
So in 77, I got a telephone from an American climber, which was the most famous climber all over the world at that time,
mm-hmm.
Henry Barber.
Okay.
Hot Henry Barber. He was...
His nickname was Hot Henry Barber.
Yeah. He pushed the rock climbing level up to new grades,
mm-hmm.
in the 70s, in mid-70s. He really did, especially solo rock climbing.
Yeah.
So I didn't know him. But he called us, and he worked as a designer, for Schoenaerts equipment.
Okay.
So he worked together with Schoenaerts equipment to design ideas about equipment, including ice climbing gear.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, steep, really vertical ice climbs have been done in the United States. Bridewell Falls in Colorado.
Okay.
And the ice climbing in Scotland, Ben Nevis, was also very inspiration for us. Ice climbing in Scotland is quite different from frozen waterfalls, because ice climbing in Scotland is a lot of condensed ice on the mountain sides.
I understand.
The Scottish, British climbers started up to do that the same way, the same idea they had about crag climbing. And that started up in the 20s and 30s. It was not climbing for climbing a waterfall or climbing a steep frozen ice wall, it was training for the alpine climbing, the real climbing.
Okay.
What in the Alps or the Himalayas or the Andes. That was the real climbing. Everything else was exercise, just training and exercise. But then we found out that it's fun. It's sport for itself. Like indoor climbing started up.
Yeah.
Indoor climbing for training. But today it's an activity and sport.
By itself,
yes. Yeah. So we saw the Scottish climbers, we saw the American climbers, and we got the ideas. And then they got that telephone from Henry Barber, who wanted to come to Hemsedal.
Okay.
Of course he was. He should come with Yvonne Chouinard. But Yvonne was busy. So another climber who was more experienced ice climber than Henry, Rob Taylor, these two guys come to us, stayed by us, and as I mentioned, I made a PowerPoint about the ice climbing story. When the gun smoke cleared, Henry and Rob has gone a lot of today classical routes in Hemsedal, and they made the first climb of North Europe's highest free-falling waterfall, Vettisfossen.
Vettisfossen, yeah.
In 77.
Vettisfossen is almost 300 meters tall.
272, I think.
Yeah.
So that was, and that climb wasn't repeated in 19 years.
So they had the first ascent in 77?
77.
And then it went like 19 years?
19 years before it was repeated. there were in that time it was a lot of competent climbers, but the waterfall wasn't competent in the amount of time because it's in Sogn, it's quite not so high over the sea level, and it's very seldom it frozen up totally. So in many years you can't climb it. Today it's a lot of climbers have done it.
But how did you feel when you actually watched the American climbers go up Vettisfossen?
The idea was that Henry and Rob insisted that me and climber from Trondheim, Håkon Gammelsæter, who worked in our company at that time, that Håkon and I should join them for that climb.
Yeah.
And we joined them up to the one third of the climb. Then Håkon and I decided that it was a bit too hairy for us.
A bit too hairy.
Yeah, so we...
A bit too dangerous.
Dangerous. So we didn't... So we found a perfect escape road to the right. It's an ice slope about 70 degrees, easy to climb, and perfect to take pictures of the two American climbers.
Okay.
So we split. Rob and Henry went into the vertical part of Vettisfossen. And I and Håkon went out to the 70 degrees part to the right and took pictures of them. And Håkon and I was back on the hut, farm hut, in 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Then it was dark and Rob and Henry didn't come. But I think it was 10 o'clock in the evening, in the total dark, they came.
Did they have any head torches or lamps?
They didn't use helmets.
They didn't use helmets?
No. And Henry had had an ice piece of ice in his head, so he had blood in his balaclava. They were so tired, but they were, of course, very happy.
Yeah.
They had decided to do that climb. But at that point, many years, was the most difficult climb done in ice climbing in the world, what we know.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
And how would you describe those two Americans? What kind of personalities did they have?
Henry was a bit bragging. He loved himself. And he loved to have lectures, which was quite hopeless, and pictures were quite bad.
Okay. But
he was a very nice guy to be together with. Mm-hmm. And Rob, one third American, one third Scottish, one third Italian. he was a very experienced ice climber.
Mm.
So So these two match each other very good at that time.
And they still inspire today's ice climbers. But,
the year after, in 1 year later, in 78, these two guys went to Kilimanjaro to go to make a waterfall there, climb there.
Mm-hmm.
And there had Rob had an accident, which was quite very dramatic.
Okay.
So, Henry had work to do with Jornard equipment, so he left Rob in the hospital.
Oh.
And after that, Rob, they were not friends at all.
Okay.
Yeah. That Rob took it very hard.
Yeah.
That Henry just left him in the in African hospital, and that was not very fun. In 79, Henry was Rudi Homberger, and a Swiss climber, came to Hemsedal and visited me and my wife Sissel, and we did some climbing, some rock climbing together with Henry. That is an example of I mentioned when I chose a climbing pal, which I'm more better than I am. So we did some first ascents where, of course, he was leading them. The most crew together.
But you are a humble guy. You admit that he was the first man in the rope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that was no problem.
So now we've heard about Thomas' climbing career and the early years in Skandinavisk Høyfjellsutstyr, the Scandinavian mountain equipment store. In the next part of this conversation, we'll learn more about Thomas' backcountry skiing and his design of iconic Norrøna products. Norrøna Podcast is published by the Norwegian outdoor company Norrøna Sport. Norrøna has been producing premium outdoor products since 1929. Check out our clothes, backpacks, tents, sleeping bags and skis on our website norrona.com. There you will also find more inspiring stories about our rich history, the expeditions we have participated in, our ambassadors and our ambitions in sustainability. Thank you for listening to Norrøna Podcast. We really appreciate it. And welcome to nature.